Morning. Morning, Mr. Spencer.
Good morning, Your Honors.
This is a companion with Jessica Johnson. In that case, the appellant has waived oral argument. It's my understanding, Ms. Bourne, that the facts are the same, the ruling is the same. Is that a fair?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that Ms. Johnson added one slightly different issue, but I can address that very quickly since they've waived oral argument if there's no objection to that.
All right. Because what we're considering is, while it hadn't been consolidated for appeal, that we have one opinion that deals with both cases. Because I think that the analysis is the same, the facts are the same, the ruling is the same.
Yes, Your Honor. And I had advised Ms. Eichluck that these were companion cases so that they would be heard on the same day. We wouldn't have different panels hearing.
Thank you. Mr. Spencer, do you want to reserve any rebuttal of your 15 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor. If I could reserve 5 minutes, please.
All right.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Cal Spencer here on behalf of Mr. Yates in this matter. This is essentially the case of the missing televisions and a missing CD player. Sort of interesting set of facts from the perspective of Mr. Jennings testified that when he came home, his doors were locked, there were no footprints.
Let me ask you this. Is the whole theory of the Commonwealth is recent possession of stolen goods. Would you agree that they were in Mr. Yates was in possession of stolen goods?
Yes, I would, Your Honor.
And was it recent possession?
It was, Your Honor.
All right. So the only issue, as I understand it, is whether or not her explanation or his explanation of how they gained possession is sufficient to rebut the inference.
Judge, I think that's accurate. That's the bottom line in the case. And Judge, basically the situation you had at trial was you had Lieutenant Scruggs, who was investigating the case, take a statement from Ms. Johnson, the co-defendant. She gives a statement where she gives a number of facts. She says, we were at a card party, I purchased the televisions for $250. She gives details about the card party. She specifies all of these details in her statement. My client did not give a statement. At trial, Ms. Johnson substantiated her statement to the police officer.
Copy that. Was there any limitation on the use of any of the statements or testimony as to either defendant?
There was not.
So one defendant's statement came in either for or against the other party.
That is correct. So you had Ms. Johnson testifying at trial consistent with that, and she adds some timesheets at trial, which would have been consistent with her being at work rather than being available to break into Mr. Jennings' residence and steal these televisions. In addition, you had the testimony of Angelique Creel, who testified she also was at this card party. She identifies the same individual, Johnny.
The court pretty much discounted Ms. Johnson's testimony and the other lady's testimony. Where does that leave us as an appellate court?
Well, Judge, you're absolutely correct. And I think the case law is pretty clear that it is up to the trier of fact to make those factual determinations. At the same time, I would point out to the court that if you look at the two ladies' testimonies, they were very consistent in terms of their testimony about the card party, the fellow named Johnny, Tyrone Marshall, the other individual who was there.
There were some inconsistencies as well, weren't there?
There were some inconsistencies, what I would term minor inconsistencies, but certainly there were inconsistencies. One thing, Judge, that I think differentiates my case from Ms. Johnson's case is the fact that my client doesn't make any statements and he doesn't testify, and it's undisputed that his possession of those televisions, according to what came in trial, came through Ms. Johnson. So you essentially have the televisions missing from the house. They come into Ms. Johnson's possession, and by her testimony, she then gives them to Mr. Yates. That's uncontroverted. So I would suggest to the court that really brings up the issue is, what is his duty at that point? Does he have a duty to determine these televisions are stolen? Where did you get these from? May I see the receipt or the bill of sale for these televisions? How did you acquire them? Is that the duty that we impose upon someone who comes into possession of those items. And again, I point back to the facts of the case, which were she was offering those to Mr. Yates because he owed a tow bill.
Doesn't your whole argument depend upon the trial court accepting the testimony of the co-defendant and witness?
It doesn't, Judge. I believe that the trial court clearly found Ms. Johnson and Ms. Creel's story about the card party not a consistent story.
Let me rephrase the question, but suppose the Commonwealth had put on the evidence here and no evidence had been presented by the defense. Would the evidence be sufficient to convict?
Judge, frankly, I think I would have to concede in that situation. Had there been no evidence presented by the Commonwealth, yes, the evidence would have been sufficient.
So your
because of the recent
dependent
inference.
Upon the court being required to accept the testimony of the co-defendant and the other witness to provide that explanation to overcome the Commonwealth's case.
At least the portion of the testimony regarding Ms. Johnson having the television and transferring it to Mr. Yates. And I would suggest to the court, that's the part the court really didn't address. The court addressed the inconsistencies about the card party, but Judge Sella did not say, you know, I just find this part about Ms. Johnson acquiring the TV and giving it to Mr. Yates to be totally incredible. That's not what the trial court found.
That argument, it seems to me, Mr. Spencer, is that, and I think you conceded, your client was in recent possession of stolen goods, and I think that it has to be unexplained. Well, he never explained it. The only explanation is from Ms. Johnson. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if we throw out, don't consider her testimony, then what's left? We have recent unexplained possession of stolen goods. That inference is sufficient to convict him, isn't it?
I would agree with you if you throw out her testimony in its entirety. And that's the question I have before the court, is whether, in fact, the trial court completely discounted everything that she said.
So you, I just want to be sure, you're relying on Ms. Johnson's testimony and the other lady's testimony?
I am, Your Honor.
All right, so you may proceed.
Thank you. So going back to the issue of how Mr. Yates came into possession of these televisions, clearly Ms. Johnson testifies that she, in fact, gave the televisions to him for the tow bill. And I think it's imperative on the court to consider Lieutenant Scruggs' testimony as corroborating evidence that he testified about the tow bill and going to the tow yard, and in fact, the vehicle still being there at that point. I think that corroborates what Ms. Johnson says about why she gave the television to him. And again, I think the real issue in the case is whether or not the trial court considered that piece of the evidence. There's no question that Judge Sella discounted what happened at the card party. But I would suggest to the court that nowhere in his comments does he specifically say, I disbelieve that Jessica Johnson came into that television by whatever means she did, and that she transferred it to Mr. Yates. If she transferred that television to Mr. Yates and he had no idea where it came from, I would suggest to the court that certainly is an explanation, going back to the reasonable hypothesis of innocence.
But again, the trial court didn't buy it.
Certainly didn't buy the part about the card party. But I would suggest to the court, I don't think the trial court specifically addressed that issue.
But the card party explained how she came into possession of the television set, right?
Yes, sir.
So doesn't that eliminate an explanation that she got it lawfully and gave it to your client lawfully?
I would suggest not, Judge. There still could be other explanations, even if the court found that's not how it came into her possession. If it came into her possession some other manner, and she then transfers it to Mr. Yates, again, let's assume she broke into the house and she stole it, and then she gives it to Mr. Yates. Again, what is the evidence that he had any knowledge that that television was stolen at that point? There is no knowledge of that. There was no evidence from the
Commonwealth. Don't you really have a judicial determination? Because the status of the evidence was he was in recent possession of stolen property. There's some explanation made. And the court then has to decide. Recent possession creates an inference, not a presumption, that's binding on the court. So the court has to decide. There is prima facie evidence. I'm not required to make the finding, but it did make the finding. So in making the finding, the court would have decided that there has been no explanation for him having possession of stolen property innocently.
Judge, again, I go back to the
fact. It's a general verdict, of course, and it's
right.
What you always stuck with in criminal law. But in effect, he had to balance whether there was sufficient evidence to make that permissible conclusion not satisfying enough to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And in having found that there was reasonable doubt, hasn't he ruled out the unknowns which you're suggesting may still exist because he didn't specifically address portions of the statement and whether it was believable?
I would suggest not, Judge, because he did not specifically address that particular issue.
Anything further?
No, sir.
All right, you have roughly 4.5 minutes left.
Yes,
of rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Bourne, do you want to tell the court if there are any differences in the Johnson case and in this case?
The only difference that I would note is that in Johnson, I believe that there was also some challenge to the whether or not the house was broken into, the evidence was sufficient to show a breaking, because there was some sort of discrepancy in the testimony alleged about the whether the window was open all the way or something like that. But I will just rely on my brief on those issues. I mean, I think that they were, I would argue that certainly there was sufficient testimony from which the court could have found that there was a breaking into the house. There was testimony.
The analysis would be the same. Recent,
yes.
Unexplained possession of stolen goods.
So that's the only additional issue that was raised in Johnson on brief, arguably. The other issue about whether or not the evidence is sufficient based on the recent possession is the same issue.
Okay. Thank you.
And the only difference is, of course, you know, the requirement that there be an explanation does not necessarily mean it has to be an explanation by the defendant. It can be any other kind of evidence presented. So the explanation here, both for Mr. Yates and for Ms. Johnson, was her testimony and the testimony of Ms. Creel. But the law requires, or says that the inference is permissible, if it's unexplained possession or if it's falsely denied. And so here we have a finding by the court as to the credibility. The question is, then becomes, do I believe the testimony of Angelique Creel and Ms. Johnson? In other words, is that an acceptable explanation to offset the inference that is drawn from reasonable possession of stolen goods? And then he says, not specifically addressing one thing over another, and that testimony seems highly implausible to me. And then he goes on to give reasons, and that's on page 134 of the appendix in Jessica Johnson's. I think the pages are slightly off on each appendix. But then goes on to give reasons why he thinks it's that testimony in its entirety, essentially, is highly implausible, that there are inconsistent statements as to what happened, that this person named Johnny is not identified by name, and nobody can give any other information, despite the fact that he's allegedly someone's cousin or related to someone's cousin or something, and that nobody knows where this person who knows him is, that he can't be found either, despite the fact that he's also related. And that the fact, just in general, that he finds it incredible that someone would just come to a card party in this fashion and offer to sell these televisions in this manner. And so he says, so I don't believe the testimony of Defendant Johnson or Angelique Creel. I think that's a fabrication. And he doesn't say, I accept it in part and reject it in part. He says, I don't believe their testimony. I find it a fabrication. And so as such, that is a falsely denied reason for having the recent possession. It is falsely denied. And therefore, it is in the same, the trial court was completely entitled to reject that testimony, did so explicitly on the record, and we are left then with the recent possession of stolen property, which is not the only evidence in this case. I mean, we have the sort of suspicious circumstances that he's going to try to get his car out the very same day that this person comes home to find his house broken into, and that he lives, Mr. Yates, lives just very close to where this took place and far away from the car party, but close to where this burglary took place, and that he's offering to sell these televisions, you know, to get his car out on the very same day under somewhat, you know, suspicious circumstances, and having both of the televisions, not just one, but both of these televisions in the trunk of his vehicle. So, for those reasons, and because of the permissible inference that has not been rebutted by any reasonable explanation, I would ask that you affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Spencer, you have some time left.
Thank you. Just a couple of things. In response to the suspicious circumstances, Mr. Jennings testified he didn't know Mr. Yates. There's no evidence Mr. Yates had been at his house in any manner. In fact, he testified no one had been to his house in 12 months, not one individual. So I would suggest to the court there are no suspicious circumstances. The fact that someone lives 3 or 4 miles away, we don't know how many people live
with the inference, do we need any other circumstances? Do we need any other facts?
If there's not an explanation, then I would concede you would not, Judge. Regarding the explanation, though, the televisions, again, I'd like to point to a couple things, again, that corroborate, I think, that these televisions were transferred from Johnson directly to Yates to pay the tow bill. Lieutenant Scruggs testifies he sits there and he watches the transaction. He doesn't actually see Yates with the televisions, but he sees Ms. Johnson drive up, the person who allegedly transferred the televisions to Mr. Yates. She's actually in the vehicle when they pull up. At that point, Mr. Smith testifies there was a tow bill, and in fact, he corroborates that, and the televisions, the first statement from Mr. Yates was that he wanted to trade the televisions for the tow bill. So again, there is some corroboration of Ms. Johnson being there, being present. I think that corroborates her statements. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Before we greet counsel, Ms. Bourne, is there anything else you want to add to Johnson?
No, I would just rely on my brief as to those other issues.
Well, I do have one question for you on that case.
May I approach
the... Surely. And this brief is somewhat hard to decipher in terms of what issues are actually being presented to us.
So my brief?
No. Okay. I'm sorry. Not your brief. My question is the issue of whether the television was, when the television was stolen, is that issue before us? Let me rephrase it. In order to convict of burglary, mm-hmm. based on possession of recently stolen property, you have to establish that the property was actually taken during the burglary.
Okay.
Here we have, as I think I remember the facts, the owner of the house was gone for some period of time.
3 days.
3 days.
And then he got back and found the window was open.
Well, that's true. And he also found that during those 3 days, property that had been in his house was no longer in his house. So
is there an issue as to whether or not this property was taken during that period or?
Well, I certainly didn't see that issue. Well, the only issue that I saw arguably raised was whether or not it was recent, which clearly was within 3 days, and of course 1 month has been found to be recent enough. So I put those cases in there because I wasn't clear whether he was trying to raise those issues or not on brief. The second argument that I think was made was, well, we don't really know that this was a breaking because there was some sort of inconsistency about the window being open or shut or how far it was open. And so I provided the court with some testimony about where he said it was ajar so that you could see that actually that there was testimony on that issue. But certainly if the court thinks that that argument was made, I think it's the court could reasonably infer that the televisions were taken at the same time of the breaking because how else would the there was just no other explanation about how the televisions were removed from the house.
I just wanted to know whether you saw that as an issue being raised. I can't tell for sure.
I
don't want to address it if it's not in there.
Well, if Your Honor would like to point me to the place on brief that you think that it was raised, perhaps I could.
You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Ms. Bourne. I'll greet counsel and then take up Gary Ray Sugg, Ms. Strick, Mr. Campbell.